Most people have expectations of what purpose a public library should serve. They're places to find books, stories that transport readers to a different place or time, that expand worldviews and shape informed citizens. A library is meant to provide neutral ground, free of censorship, for people who are figuring out where they stand. They're expected to be a place for everyone, as their names bear the words public or community. The people that work there connect users to resources that can improve their quality of life. But in recent years, libraries have had to adapt, from changing technologies to new expectations from patrons. I'm WESA education reporter Sarah Schneider, and in this hour-long special, we will explore why libraries were created as public spaces, how libraries have reinvented themselves, and how its leaders are thinking critically about the way its youngest users interact with the library. If you're a really young kid, your experience in a library probably involves a story time. That sounds something like this.
Is this the bus for us, Gus? And can everybody say that part with me? Is this the bus for us, Gus?
Toddlers sit in a semicircle and stare intently at the adult holding the book. She flips through colorful pages, points to words as she reads them, and asks the listeners questions along the way.
Does that look like the bus that's coming along?
That's not a bus.
No? What do you think it might be?
That's a fire truck.
How can you tell it's a fire truck?
It's a scene you could find in most public libraries. These kids are in Brookline with librarian Erin Scioli, who reads a story about children waiting for a school bus. As the story progresses, caregivers wrangle their children, sitting them back down in the circle. And perched at the front of a kid-sized chair, Scioli scans the room, engaging every child.
Yeah, that's the bus.
You think so? What do you think, Jane? Think this is the bus?
Yeah.
How about you, Penny?
After the story, Scioli tells the toddlers to grip imaginary steering wheels as they pretend to drive down a rough road.
I'm gonna sing. Bumping up and down in my little yellow school bus, bumping up and down.
It's a fun song, but there is more to it. When she's planning a story time, Scioli says she's thinking about brain development and the five components to early literacy: singing, reading, writing, playing, and talking.
So if you do those five things with your kids when they're young, they have a good head start when they're learning how to read.
She's been a librarian for 27 years, and while she plays a role in helping young children develop and learn new things, she says her job has evolved. She sees libraries as multi-purpose places for families with young children to come and socialize.
Parents and kids can come and use the library in that way, and maybe not even check out a book here. We hope they do, but it's not necessarily just for books anymore.
It is apparent that children and teen specialists at the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh are guided by the mission of meeting the needs of the children who visit the libraries. The youth coordinators I spoke to say their purpose is to serve the community, in whatever way that may be. For young kids, that could mean providing play spaces. For teenagers, that could look like homework help or just having a place to decompress.
And sometimes after being in school for a full day, you do need a little bit of time to just kind of zone out for a little bit.
Kelly Rotman is the teen services coordinator for the 19 Pittsburgh library branches.
And for some teens, that means reading a book. For some teens, it means talking to their friends. For some teens, it means getting on the computer, playing computer games, where often they are problem solving and collaborating with their friends through the computer game.
The library subscribes to an online tutoring service that connects teens to experts. They offer after-school reading clubs and have invested in software and equipment to teach kids coding, programming, and video and audio engineering. The system has made a concerted effort since 2012 to focus on teen services. That's when the library started receiving more tax funding. We'll hear more about that later in the hour. And since then, the number of teens using the library has increased. But librarians are not pushing books on kids. Sienna Cittadino is the teen librarian at the Allegheny branch on the north side, and she says her job is to be a caring adult.
I think that there's a lot of education that goes on around soft skills and learning how to coexist in a big, loud space where a lot of different people are coming for a lot of different reasons, and learning how to work out anything that might come up in those situations.
The teen space at the Allegheny Library is loud, especially right after school. Teens play video games, a few sit and talk, and others, like Annabelle Piles, create music. She's a sophomore at City Charter High School downtown, and she's using the library software to make electronic dance music, or EDM.
What I'm doing right now is I'm adjusting the automation, so adjusting how certain things will sound, adjusting where they will sound in the track.
Here's the song she's working on. She says she was drawn to the genre when she heard an EDM song in a video game.
I fell in love with the music like immediately. I'm like, hey, this sounds cool. Maybe I can try to make that. I can make a career out of this.
So she went to the library and learned how to use the audio production program GarageBand.
And I'm like, hey, let's get to work. And I released it within one day.
She says she occasionally picks up a graphic novel, but she goes to the library primarily to work on her music. And for the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh, that's fine. The librarians and coordinators I spoke to were all on the same page. They say the library has to be a place where children and teens are comfortable. If that involves reading and research, great. If it's playing with friends or playing a video game, that's equally as important. Being a resource in the community is part of the bedrock of the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. And while the offerings of the system have changed, WESA's Katie Blackley reports libraries have always been free and accessible.
Andrew Carnegie was 13 years old when he arrived in Allegheny City, now Pittsburgh's north side. A native of Scotland, he was bright and curious, according to Marilyn Holt, head of the library's Pennsylvania department.
And what he wanted to do was to continue his education. But he needed to help support his family.
He got a job as a bobbin boy at a cotton mill and then as a messenger. While working, he encountered a wealthy philanthropist named Colonel James Anderson.
And Colonel Anderson opened his private library to young boys on Saturdays for their half day, and Andrew took advantage of that.
A voracious reader, Carnegie used the library often, even forming conversation clubs about the literature he consumed with his friends.
And he says in his autobiography, I determined at that time, if I could do the same for anyone else, that I would. And so the idea of the free public library caught fire in him.
Carnegie would go on to amass a steel empire and become one of the wealthiest industrialists in the country. While his steel mills employed thousands and helped Pittsburgh become a major manufacturing hub, he was also controversial. His involvement in the bloody 1892 Homestead Steel Strike and 1889 Johnstown Flood that killed more than 2,000 have been heavily criticized. But in his retirement in the late 19th century, Carnegie began opening free public libraries.
His first gift, of course, was to his hometown of Dunfermline, Scotland.
His next library opened in Allegheny City, followed by Braddock, where his Edgar Thompson Steel Mill was located. Then in 1893, workers broke ground on the Carnegie Library's main branch, next to land that would become Schenley Plaza. The building housed a music hall, art gallery, and natural history museum, and included two Venetian towers.
But when the building actually was brought to fruition, Mr. Carnegie said that he thought that the twin towers made it look like a mule with long ears.
The towers came down, and the complex opened its doors.
He felt that all of these things together would inspire people. People would come and they would see the great art, they would read the great books, they would educate themselves.
Teen librarian Jessica Smith leads historic tours through the main branch and says for Carnegie, there were no cost restrictions.
You get that feeling of like royalty and grandeur. And then at the same time, the juxtaposition that this is for anybody, any station to come in and utilize.
Marble lines the lobby of the main branch, and intricately painted arches loom over visitors. There are a lot of what Smith calls hidden gems around the main branch. Printer's markers made by the library's architects can be seen near the ceilings of many rooms. Original tile lines the lobby by the staircase, and medallions in the hallways depict historical figures from the Renaissance.
Also marrying these really ornate details with Carnegie steel, which is what he brought to the table in building the skeletal structure of this building.
Each building was constructed to safely house books. They were typically brick and made without fireplaces. The Braddock Library was designed as a community center, as was his branch and homestead. There were basketball courts, billiards, and in some, swimming pools. Heinz History Center historian Anne Matarath says the Homestead Library swimming pool produced some significant athletes.
There are, from that swim team, four women who went and competed for the U.S. in the Olympics. So you don't think about, you know, a library as a place that has this great sports tradition, but the clubs and the athletes associated with that Carnegie Library are renowned for their success.
Carnegie purposely constructed his original libraries near his steel mills so workers and their families could access information like he had when he was young. The library's Marilyn Holt says the books reflected the diversity of the city at the time.
We were purchasing books in the native languages of many of the immigrants who came here so that they could find material to read, and they were continuing to expand their horizon.
Librarians would travel to different communities with tote bags full of books. Holt says after Carnegie established his philanthropic foundation, he began building libraries across the country.
So there were a lot of criteria that you had to satisfy to make sure that you were doing the best possible job in the library. It was not just a take the money and run kind of process.
Communities had to prove that the library was wanted and used by its members. They weren't given a blank check for books and staff either, only the building. But many cities took advantage of the opportunity, and today there are more than 1,900 Carnegie libraries around the world. Pittsburgh's was also the first to establish a program for children's librarians.
Because we understood that training the children's librarian was crucial to build a reader, to build a person who understood that the resources are here, and to love that lifelong learning.
In the main library's children's room, there's still a tiny sink where kids used to wash their hands. Librarian Jessica Smith says it was installed in 1907 when Pittsburgh was sooty and smoky.
So that children would have to come in and wash their hands first before they could touch the books.
Carnegie libraries were some of the first to have open stacks where people could find books themselves instead of asking the librarians.
And this was a really new idea in libraries, is that the public could actually go and get their own books.
This self-guided exploration would lead readers to other literature and inspire curiosity. Instead of towering wooden desks, librarians sat lower and closer to the level of a child.
Users of various ages were really at the forefront of designing the building and taking their needs into consideration.
Carnegie libraries are still some of the largest buildings in many towns, and the 18 branches in the Pittsburgh area remain staples of their neighborhoods. Smith says the libraries are intentionally grand, but also accessible.
You feel that you can learn and you have a place to just be immersed in history.
Carnegie libraries are constantly evolving and modernizing. Now, users can check out audio equipment and learn how to DJ. They can visit makerspaces with 3D printers. They can apply for a job and get resume help. Marilyn Holt says even with all the changes, they'll always stay true to the library's mission.
They're not static. They don't just sit. We're constantly doing things, and we're constantly tweaking the collections, tweaking the programs, listening to the community in terms of what they need and how we can assist them down whatever path it is they're going on.
While libraries have had to evolve in their offerings, they've also had to rethink how to pay for the services they provide. Carnegie opened hundreds of libraries, but he didn't fund them in perpetuity. Coming up, where libraries in Pennsylvania get their funding.